Our next speaker is Dr. Dave Eibling. He's an otolaryngologist from the VA Pittsburgh Healthcare System. We'll be talking about unintended retained items as well as prevention of misidentification errors.
So I have no financial disclosures, but I probably have one wrong patient error per week. You'll see why. And also I have lapispongin. So I would suggest that much of what we're talking about today are wicked problems. And the wicked problem is basically a problem that defies simple solutions, the first introduced in the management literature back in the 60s. So this is a true story. It's not us. Two residents playing the role of nurses asking why the terminal wean orders are on patient X rather than patient Y. And they call me on the phone, and of course, I say there's no possible way this could happen. And the reason, of course, is because I got distracted. And in fact, the data on distraction is quite strong. If you're distracted during driving or any other critical activity, your chance of returning to your original task is affected dramatically, actually as much as 1 in 5 times. And so that's the story of wrong patient errors. In fact, if you look at reports, this is from ECRI, 2.5 years, only 7,000, which means there are a lot of unreported errors. Most of them occurred during encounters, a few at intake, and most all of them were intercepted before harm. In a special of CNN in a couple years ago of 25 shocking errors, 6 of those were wrong patient errors. We believe that the true number is much larger. It's probably the most unreported error in healthcare. So where do they occur? They occur in multiple locations. Here's how I get in trouble. I'm managing 4 patients or 5 or more patients at one time in the clinic, 2 residents, 2 medical students, and a nurse practitioner. And I get distracted, and you know the rest of the story. Again, these are almost all caught immediately. Radiology, something like 26% of medication of radiology errors are wrong patient. Something like 21% of pathology errors are due to mislabeled specimen, some percentage of which are wrong patient. Interestingly, wrong wristband has also been implicated. How many of you have had a patient with wrong wristband? Yeah, so quite a few of us have. Mine was detected by my patient's wife. Once you start that process, then everything else is a chain of errors. So then there's this thing called intentional fraud, which is actually stealing, if you will, healthcare resources. Something like 2.3 million victims, although it's pointed out that most of these were unreported, and it's thought that most of the victims were collaborators obtaining care for a family member or friend. So technology does make a difference, and we all know the story of barcode medication administration and how well that works. I would refer you to the Koppel paper. Did we just lose my picture? Okay, well, he lost the picture. Anyway, so refer to a paper by Ross Koppel. Koppel in 2008, looking at barcode medication administration workarounds. We scan all of our patients as they roll into the operating room. I suspect many of you do the same thing. This quote from just this month in Joint Commission, technology alone cannot assure correct identification. So something like 96% of ED physicians admit to a wrong patient order in the last 3 months. One way of studying this is look at retract and reorder. In other words, any order that was placed, retracted within 10 minutes, and then reordered on another patient. You can do that by looking at large databases. Something like 1 in 1,500 orders initially placed. This is a study actually out of the University of Pittsburgh. And again, it's distraction and opening more than one record at a time. So the way you prevent it, of course, is you need more than one identifier, and you need to avoid distractions at that time. You need a policy that works, and a policy that's followed. At the VA, we use complete name and complete 9-digit Social Security number. And the common errors are using the room number or location, asking the patient, are you Mr. Smith, skipping SNPs, and bypassing technology such as barcode. And, oh, by the way, involving the patient and the family is, is actually critical. So what's in the future? Well, there's this this idea that we can use biometrics. I personally believe that the national patient identifier is not going to happen for a variety of privacy concerns. This is a picture of a radiation therapy suite in which the patient puts their finger on the fingerprint reader before the machine will actually turn on. So now I'm going to go directly on to our next topic, and it's been a long day. It's 9 o'clock at night. I've done bilateral necks, laryngopharyngectomy, put up a PEC flap, margins positive, took it down, put it back up again, creating the stoma, closing the wound, and I'm tired. And I got a late start that day, and the wound is partly closed, and the nurse says, oh, we're off by one. And I say, well, I look around a little bit, put my finger down and feel around, don't find anything. I says, oh, it's probably in the sponges. And I say, let's call X-ray. We call X-ray. They're at least a half an hour away. They're tied up in a problem in the ICU. I said, I'll tell you what, we'll just go to the ICU and we'll do the X-ray there. And sure enough, there's a sponge in the lateral gutter in one of the necks. So I go talk to the family. Next morning, we go back and take it out. And the patient wasn't really harmed, but I certainly was. So these are rare problems, but they're real. And one of my favorite words is this gossypiboma. Interestingly, the number on this slide that matters is that 88% of the time the sponge count was correct. I'm going to get back to that in a few minutes. And, of course, as you know, this has a major impact on us as surgeons. It has a major impact on our institutions. And I would suggest it's related to second. It oftentimes creates second victims. So we all know the risk factors. I was surprised to find in my reading that in emergencies, the risk of retained items is up by 9 times. And we know the rest of these. And because we know where these things are likely to occur, then we can actually apply extra vigilance. So although it's bad for us, it's a rainmaker for the attorneys, malpractice attorneys. I love this term. We are really talking about inexcusably abandoned. I love that. And because it's a res ipsa loquitur, there's no need for expert witness. You're automatically guilty. The American College of Surgeons revised their policy statement two years ago, and they include the statement that sometimes you have to suspend what you're doing. So who else is looking at this? I would strongly recommend reviewing the AORN guidelines. They're actually extremely well written. Some of you may be involved with nothingleftbehind.org. They have some good material on there as well. And the fact is that as humans, and all of us are humans, we all live in this world where we can make mistakes. So how do you reduce the probability of mistakes is by having everybody in the room playing, everybody knowing the rules, everybody following the rules, and committing to no shortcuts. But the fact is, because we're human, we drift. And as we drift, we tend to become complacent because, oh, it never happened to me. I mean, leave a sponge in the neck? Are you kidding? It's impossible. It's never happened to me. So watch out for drift. So technology can help us compensate. And the RFID data is actually pretty good. How many here routinely use RFID sponges? Okay, so fair number. So this is a recent report just out a couple months ago, which they looked at 319 retained surgical items, and 7 of these were detected either in the operating room or the PAR after the wound was closed. One was a Curlex. The one that was most interesting, of course, was that the machine or the device alarmed, but the count was correct, forgetting that 88% of the time the count is recorded as correct, and it was left in there. So it's not so simple. It doesn't work all the time. For example, if you have chipped towels laying on top of the patient, when you wave the little wand, guess what? The chips go off. So we have towels with chips and towels without chips, which of course creates a little bit of an extra excitement, if you will, in detecting what's going on. So they remain a wicked problem. So I'd love to have more time to talk about high reliability organizations and how the use of the principles of high reliability can, in fact, perhaps reduce our likelihood of falling prey to wicked problems. With that, I'm over. I'm sorry.